on this episode of Rebel Spirit Radio.
One way of talking about it is that we have an essence self. Self before we were born, like Buddhism talks about. We have a greater consciousness that is who we are. And then you hear the term soul loss or soul retrieval. There's aspects of our self during our journey on planet Earth that we get separated from, trauma. And these parts of us go into the unconscious and are waiting for us to pay attention to them and for the right time for them to reveal what they know and come back and join us so that we're more whole. So that's soul retrieval. And I have a maybe kind of unique view about soul retrieval, because you hear of so many offerings by supposed healers or shamans that they can soul retrieve you in one session. I don't really believe that's at all possible. I believe that what we're here to do is soul retrieve ourselves with the help of a therapy, shamanic guide. But we have to do that work for our own souls. We have to get ready and go and find that lost part of ourselves and work with it and welcome it back and integrate it. So soul retrieval, every human has to do it.
Welcome to Rebel Spirit Radio, exploring the frontiers of spirituality, consciousness, the esoteric, and humanity's sacred relationship with a living earth. I'm your host, Nick Mather, and in this episode, I am joined by counselors and co-authors Norma and Nisha Burton to talk about their book, Navigating Liminal Realms. We discuss the in-between space linking ordinary waking reality and non-ordinary consciousness, and how ancient traditions taught people to navigate these realms and why such training still matters today. We touch upon shadow work, trauma-related fragmentation, soul retrieval, and the ongoing process of integration. Also, please be sure to like and subscribe to this podcast on whatever platform you use to listen to or view podcasts. Your support is truly appreciated. Norma Burton is a counselor with a background in transpersonal psychology with academic degrees in Buddhist psychology and shamanic traditions. She specializes in trauma healing, shadow work, and Jungian dream analysis. Having apprenticed with indigenous elders for more than 30 years, she founded the Journey to Completion methodology and the Circle of Trust Healing Center. Nisha Burton has been a skilled dream worker and lucid dreaming practitioner for more than a decade. She's an award-winning filmmaker and a sought-after consultant on branding and emerging technologies for Fortune 100 companies. A specialist in visual storytelling and film AI integration, she speaks at conferences and universities worldwide. They join me today to discuss their book, Navigating Liminal Realms. Norma and Nisha, welcome to Rebel Spirit Radio.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, well, I'm very happy to be speaking with you today. I finished your book last night, so I've been very much looking forward to discussing it with you. I thought that the place to begin, I kind of warned you before I hit record that I can't get away from being a teacher and or a philosopher in that matter, and always want to define my terms. And I think this is helpful because I've heard sometimes from some of my audience members that maybe talking about something with a guest that I assume everyone knows, but they're like, well, but what is that? So I thought that the place to begin would be with the title. What do you mean by liminal realms?
Yeah, I can start off with that one. So the term liminal, interestingly, has become popular recently, especially on social media. And there's this whole movement around liminal spaces, these in-between spaces that are somewhat surreal and maybe even a little unsettling sometimes. But really the way that we're speaking about liminal is the in-between, these realms that are between ordinary consciousness, waking reality, which we all experience, and non-ordinary reality or the dream time, and how by engaging and understanding how to work with these liminal realms, you receive a deeper level of understanding about your own psyche, about your inner worlds, as well as non-ordinary consciousness, which a lot of us in our Western culture are one very hungry for and also very disconnected from, whereas other cultures have much more integration between ordinary reality and the dream time or non-ordinary reality. We've been very cut off, but now there is this new movement of interest and excitement around exploring these liminal realms, exploring these spaces within ourselves and the collective unconscious that are not just in waking reality.
Ancient spiritual traditions always dealt with the liminal realms. You hear betwixt and between in the Celtic mythology or the bardo realms in Tibetan Buddhism. So people were taught traditionally how to navigate into liminal realms and therefore become unafraid of the change that happens in our psyche when we're letting go and going into the unknown. So that's a good place to start about our book because it's a training manual for how to go into these liminal realms successfully.
And one thing I'll just quickly add about the liminal realms, too, related to the Bardo realms and the Tibetan Book of the Dead, is that there's also teachings around how we go through liminal times in ordinary reality. Say you're making a move, you're making a big change in your job, a relationship is ending. These are also all liminal moments where you're between what was and what's becoming. And so, as you learn to navigate the liminal realms of non-ordinary reality, you also become better equipped to navigate the changes that constantly happen in life, right? Of the liminal times in your waking reality.
And there's a pathway through. That's what we teach in the book. I call it, there's a gap space between where we have been and where we're going. So we need rituals in the gap in order to be able to get us from one place to the other and not get lost along the way.
And there's so much there that I want to dig into. And there is a very specific point. I don't want to address it yet, but I do want to come back to it that Nisha was writing about in the book that I think is important. And it's going to be in regards to the relationship with the Western paradigm or mindset and liminal realms. But I want to wait a little bit before kind of digging into that a little bit. The backdrop for the book, I think, and correct me if you think this is wrong, but we're currently undergoing what many people refer to as a psychedelic renaissance and working with the sacred medicines, more often than not, plant medicines, is one of these liminal realms that you're discussing. And I think that what's so crucially important here, and that I've not actually seen addressed so much before, and I think this is one of the greatest values in your book, is this idea that we need to prepare ourselves for entering this liminal space with these medicines, and that we can do this with some other techniques of altering our consciousness or exploring our consciousness as it kind of alters naturally in the dream state. So let me stop there and ask, do I have that right?
Yes, that is exactly what really propelled us to write this book right now, because so much experience is taking place by so many people, right, in the psychedelic realms, but it can be very haphazard and even dangerous at times because it's like jumping into the deep end without having trained oneself in those realms. So our book really is about the precursor trainings that have existed in cultures around the world to help people learn their psyche and learn, like we say, psychonavigating with skill in their psyche in these ancient methodologies, so that when you do go into the relationship with a third being, which is the plant medicine, you know your own inner landscape and the maps of it better. And you also establish this relationship inside yourself with what is called the I-thou. Joseph Campbell referred to that, Martin Buber, that we have to get to know this other beingness, higher power, higher consciousness, deeper consciousness within us, and establish this relationship and learn to trust it and be guided by it. so that when we interact with the plant medicine, which is a third consciousness, it's a relationship that's well formed too.
Yeah, and building off of that, psychonavigation is another term we talk about in our book that many might not be familiar with, but really you can hear what its meaning is within the word psycho, your psyche, navigation, navigating. So learning how to navigate your psyche with skill and with mindfulness, and understanding that we have one universal maps, collective maps that, like my mom was saying, people from ancient cultures have been working with and using to go down into the psyche and work with it, extract beautiful gifts out of it in the deep unconscious, and then come back out again and integrate all of that information. And then we have our personal maps, which are unique to us about what our how our mind works, how our inner worlds work. And really, the unconscious is largely elements that we're not consciously aware of. And so, how do we learn how to face and look into those things, look into oftentimes the shadows that can be held in those realms and get the gift out of it and really work with that? And with psychedelics, a lot of times they do take us into those spaces, into the underworld, into our psyche. And the shadow does arise. But if people don't know how to work with that, if they haven't had experiences doing it in a more gradual way, like we're teaching about through lucid dreaming and through drumming journeys, then they be can become very fragmented because they're faced with these extreme experiences and seeing their shadows or seeing these elements that live in their psyches in a very big and real tangible way, but not knowing, not having the training of how to work with that and how to navigate both successfully in and then back out. And that's a big thing we talk about, is a lot of times people can get fragmented and lost and need more healing because they haven't successfully extracted themselves all the way out of that experience.
Yeah, the thing that struck me is that there is, in working with plant medicines, for example, there's often this notion that after the ceremony that you have to undergo integration. And often that is not given the due it deserves, I think. Some groups do a really good job at it, but others maybe not so much. And what I found really interesting is that what you're doing in the book here is actually beginning the integration process before the ceremony. And that's, again, something that I don't think that people are really used to. And I want to ask a couple of questions in regards to what you were both just talking about. And one, just to kind of clarify, because it's one of those terms that I can't assume that everyone knows, because this is one where I had a guest on and we were talking about shadows and shadow works. And one of my listeners is like, I didn't know what that was. So they had to look it up. So the question here, I'm going to give you two-part question here in a sense. When you're talking about the psyche, we tend to think of psyche as the mind or the consciousness. But psyche also, it's a multivalent term. It can also refer to as soul. So I'm curious what your understanding of psyche is. And then in conjunction with that, the shadow, what is the shadow, and how do we work with the shadow in these liminal realms? And I know that's a huge, huge questions, loaded questions.
But important to lay the groundwork of understanding. So, when we go through trauma as a child, our psyche splits. It can split over and over and over again and become very fragmented. But let's just look at that process to talk about what the shadow is. So, let's give an example of, say, a child goes through something very difficult like sexual abuse. In that moment, they can't comprehend what's really happening. And so their psyche is trying to grapple with that. And part of the psyche goes into the persona, which is our presentation to the world. And part of it goes down into the shadow, the unknown inside of us, the buried. So, for example, a perpetrator might say to the child, don't tell anybody. So, what goes down into the shadow is the ability to speak about it. And then they say, be a good girl. And so then they, the persona becomes pleasing people and trying to take care of the adults. So you begin to develop the split in your personality. You don't have access to your voice, your no, your boundaries. You may become either very boundaried or very promiscuous and not really know exactly why. And into the persona, your presentation to the world, you try to be very kind, take care of everybody, make sure, the adults are satisfied. So that's an example of how the split develops. So we all have material that is buried in our unconscious that we're not fully aware of, and we're being protected by our setup of our psyche so that we're not, being flooded by that information all the time so that we can function in the world. But at a certain point, we're always looking for a safe enough container in which we can start to know ourselves better and bring forth the hidden material and deconstruct our persona. So at a certain point, we need to find that safe enough container. People are always seeking that through a lover, being able to tell your lover all your secrets, or in therapy, or through taking psychedelics. So there's, a need for it. All humans have a need for bringing themselves back together, defragging, and becoming more known to themselves and more whole. But the issue is finding a safe enough container. So that's what our book and the mapping process is talking about, that the journey to completion, which is what I teach and have been taught by the Huichol lineage, it's developing a safe container right from the beginning of wanting to heal yourself. And there are steps to that that we have to set up first to make it safe. And then you start in a systematic way, carefully going into your psyche so that the unconscious defense mechanisms aren't aroused and they shut down and will keep you from finding that information. You've got to go in there carefully. So all of that is happening before you would take the psychedelics. And then when you take the psychedelics, it's it's a major opening of your psyche. It's like unlocking Pandora's box. Things are going to come up. So you'll be more prepared, more knowledgeable about what they might be. And then the opportunity to further integrate that information after you come out is a long, slow process that you interact with your world with more knowledge and you gradually integrate. So it's not like a one-time meeting after the psychedelic event. It usually, I find that it usually takes at least 6 months. So that's another thing about the ancient ways of approaching psychedelics. They didn't use them repetitively all the time. The psychedelic was used to really deepen and punctuate the work that was going on with the shaman or with the healer. It's a slower process, but very accurate to how the psyche works, very thorough, and really accomplishes the ending of a certain shadow pattern. So, does that help to explain about how I see the shadow developing and how I approach it?
And just the other part of that question, though, was psyche in general. Is it because with what you were talking about, that fragmentation, what immediately came to my mind is this idea of soul loss that you all hear about in some of the shamanic traditions. And so it seems like when we talk about the psyche, it's not just equivalent to consciousness, but that there's something a little bit more there that's happening.
One way of talking about it is that we have an essence self. Self before we were born, like Buddhism talks about. We have a greater consciousness that is who we are. And then you hear the term soul loss or soul retrieval. There's aspects of our self during our journey on planet Earth that we get separated from trauma. And these parts of us go into the unconscious and are waiting for us to pay attention to them and for the right time for them to reveal what they know and come back and join us so that we're more whole. So that's soul retrieval. And I have a maybe kind of unique view about soul retrieval because you hear of so many offerings by supposed healers or shamans that they can soul retrieve you in one session. I don't really believe that's at all possible. I believe that what we're here to do is soul retrieve ourselves with the help of a therapy, shamanic guide. But we have to do that work for our own souls. We have to get ready and go and find that lost part of ourselves and work with it and welcome it back and integrate it. So soul retrieval, every human has to do it.
And also, that's a lot of what we emphasize in the book is this personal empowerment and how these tools that we're teaching around lucid dreaming and dream work, as well as the drumming journeys, which just to briefly talk about that for listeners, it's a real pathway and map in order to transfer your waking consciousness into more non-ordinary reality without the use of any substances, where you go into this trance state and there's particular things that are mapped out in our book that you do once you get there, finding a power animal and then following your inner compass, your inner guide, your personal power into these areas carefully. And so with both of these modalities that really we're talking about are precursors to working with psychedelics that a lot of people are missing, you learn how to trust your inner guidance. You learn gradually that you can trust, okay, this is the next thing it's bringing me to face. This is the next thing, and that it happens at a pace that you are ready for, that it happens at a pace that you can handle and integrate and work with, reflect on, and then move to the next thing. And so with psychedelics, they can be really great, and they can provide this, again, really extreme experience of having non-ordinary reality come into waking reality. However, we talk about how it's, again, you're interacting with this third consciousness, the plant medicine, a lot of times, and it will take you on its journey, right? Then you are going, I think of it sometimes like a roller coaster. Once you get on and you strap in, you're on the ride and you can't get off until it's over, right? And it's going at the speed that it's going at. And so sometimes, again, people go to things a little bit too quickly or are having to face things that they weren't necessarily ready for within themselves because they're on this other ride. By doing the work ahead of time and by working at a more gradual pace and getting to know and trust that they have actually a lot of agency in non-ordinary reality, which a lot of us don't realize, then when you interact with that third consciousness and you're going on that ride and you have that ally there with you, you know how to better handle and integrate what comes to you. And like my mom was saying earlier, you're also prepared for it because you've had a preview into what might arise because you're working with your dreams, you're seeing what nightmares are arising, and you're working through that. And then you're also working with this drumming journey, pathway, and modality.
Yeah. A couple of things. Again, it's always many things that come to mind. One is just kind of in general, I began this conversation by saying that the background for this is this what's being called the psychedelic renaissance. But I would actually kind of open it up more because having recorded almost 200 episodes of this podcast now, I have interviewed a number of people that are have been studying with shaman, indigenous shamans all over the world. And it seems to me that there is this quest for something a little bit more authentic, perhaps, a little bit more experiential when it comes to spirituality, that is also opening up at the same time as this psychedelic renaissance. And I don't think that's a mistake. So again, that's also one of the values I found in your book is that you're making these connections in a sense with what seems to be happening in the psychic zeitgeist, I suppose, of humanity at the moment. But the other thing I wanted to say is that with the prevalence of conversations regarding the plant medicines and psychedelics, I do think that there is, and I was guilty of this myself, I think that there is this thinking that's fairly common that working with the psychedelic is just a one and done thing. Like, oh, I'm going to go and I'm going to drink some ayahuasca and that's going to fix all my problems. And that is not at all what happens. And you may need to have more than one ceremony with the medicine, but it's not just that ceremony in the, you know, the ceremonies, but it's that integration that happens in between. And the ayahuasca that I had worked with, what he had said all the time, he's like, you are the shamans. You are. And so when you bring up this idea of agency, I think that is another aspect of this that is absolutely crucial, that it's not this passive, just like, here, take this pill and that's going to fix you. But it is an active engagement, not just with the plant medicines, not just with our own consciousness, but ourselves. You know, our greater self is a vital part of all of this.
Those are such good points. And taking self responsibility, I have always called shamanism 101. You have to come to the point where you're willing to take complete self responsibility for the life you've created. And that means you're stepping into a vulnerable surrender to Great Spirit to be guided into deconstructing the work at hand, deconstructing this setup that you've created that's dualistic, that has you split, for one thing, in your psyche, but also has you projecting out your shadow, your judgments onto everyone around you in a blame game. And so you're willing to take that all back and to take self-responsibility and begin exploring your own trauma wounds. And the whole purpose of that in the Huicho teaching is to regather your power and become impeccable with your use of power so that you're not going around misusing power on others. So this is such a key part of this exploration that's happening in our culture. People need to realize that that's what they are actually needing to do. When they're going after psychedelic experiences or whatever, they're needing to move toward taking self-responsibility for their lives and not seeking outside of themselves, some quick fix or just even some adventure at the expense of others. But that's the shamanic path. That's the ancient pathway, is coming to the point in your life where you're ready to take self-responsibility. So a lot of what I see going on, not maybe a majority, but a lot of what I see going on in the psychedelic renaissance is a big youthful adventure seeking and kind of a pridefulness about, yeah, I had this really terrible adventure when I went to the Amazon, or I had this really dangerous thing happen. It's like, whoa, okay, that's all very exciting and interesting and fun stories, but that wasn't traditionally what the shamanic path is about, It's about this coming to a point of maturity where you're ready to take on responsibility for healing yourself and becoming a better person.
And add to that too, I feel like, with our culture and seeing this movement, we are very trained to externalize power and to externalize authority. And so with psychedelics, it can be tempting for many people to externalize that, right? Like, oh, I can get to non-ordinary reality only through this substance. This is the only way that I can access these realms. And then that creates a dependency, and sometimes even on towards an addiction, because people are thinking in themselves, the only way that I can get this thing, which I so deeply hunger for, because it is innately human to hunger for non-ordinary consciousness. But they think the only pathway towards that is through doing psychedelics. And then it becomes a thing where it's like, I need to do the next one. Oh, this one's not strong enough. I need to go further. I need to push harder. And what we're really talking about is, no, actually, you have access to those realms within yourself. And the answers you're seeking, again, are within yourself. And psychedelics can be really helpful guides and allies at certain moments, certain like inflection points, to help shift your habitual ways of seeing or to help open the lenses. However, the work, the ongoing work really is to access those states within yourself. And so lucid dreaming, that's a big thing that I teach about. And just to give a level set on that of what
Yeah,
that term
please.
means, a lucid dream is one in which you are within the dream and you realize beyond a doubt that you are dreaming within the dream. And then that clicks on lucidity, like a light switch clicking on, where you realize, wait a minute, I'm dreaming. And then you stay within the dream rather than just waking up. And once you switch into that state, everything feels so real. It's amazing, but it's very visceral, very tangible. You can taste things, you can feel the wind blowing through your hair. It's this kind of other state of consciousness, right, than a regular non-lucid dream. And through that, then you have this heightened level of agency. And I always say agency rather than control, because in lucid dreams, some people think, oh, I can have total control over it. But again, there's this I thou consciousness. There's this other part of you, which you can look at in many ways as the universe, as your higher self, as your psyche that you're interacting with. So you don't have complete control, but you have this level of agency in your dream time, non-ordinary reality, where then you can work with amazing things. You can work with these shadow patterns. You can talk to your higher self. You can speak with your inner child. You can do all of these things and really feel this level of personal empowerment. And you learn that space more and more the more you go into it. And then similarly with the drumming journeys, the more you do those, the more you learn that terrain. And you see, wow, I have access to that which I'm seeking. Not externally only, but within myself. I go to sleep every night for free. I can do it there. Drumming journeys again, you can access that in yourself for free. And so that leads to this level of self-knowledge and self-empowerment where you're no longer putting the authority and the power outside of yourself.
Yeah, and it occurs to me that, I have to, I'm basing a lot of my statements here just on my own personal experiences. But people who may be listening and they think about the drumming, let's start with the drumming, and then I want to go into the lucid dreaming a little bit. And then there's another point I have been holding on to. But I think that some people may think that the drumming, it's just imagination. You're just kind of going through with your imagination. And it seems that we discard, one, we discard the imagination as having any kind of relevance. But my own personal experience, I did a training with Michael Harner, and I was frustrated going through this training because, we had drummers there, and I just wasn't experiencing anything until the very last day. And then I had this amazing experience, and the only way that I can describe it was it felt like I was waking up into a dream. Although I was completely conscious and aware of my body and where I was, it had that sort of dreamlike characteristic to it. And so I was wondering if maybe, Norma, you can talk a little bit about the drumming journeys. And then I want to go into the lucid dreaming a little bit more too.
Yeah, that's great. I met Michael Harner when he first came back from the Amazon because of the age I am. So I was in on that early set of people learning about the effect of the drumming journey on the psyche. And so that was back in 1979. So I've been leading people on drumming journeys all through these years. So thousands and thousands of drumming journeys, which is what has helped me to be able to map the psyche through the drumming journeys. So, I'm so glad that you had that experience, Nick, of getting it, of what these drumming journeys do to the psyche. They really do bring you into that state of lucidity. So, just like Nisha was saying, in the lucid dream state, your sensorial mechanisms come online and you can really feel everything. It's very real. So, I describe the use of the imagination in the drumming journey. Like you use your imagination to walk out on the diving board. Yes, imagine, 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 imagine it. But what I have been taught to set people's imagination to work on is to imagine digging. So you use your imagination to dig down into the past the roots of the tree and feel the dirt in your fingernails and really imagine digging, 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 and keep bringing your imagination back to just that task, because the imagination needs a task. Just like in Buddhist meditation, you might focus on your breathing and counting your breaths, or focus on a candle. So you need to focus your imagination, but then you jump off the diving board and the imagination gives way to this encounter. And you encounter something greater than yourself that you're amazed by, surprised by. And it's real. You know, like in the Eleusinian Mysteries from Greece, they talk about the gnosis, Gnosis, the direct knowing. So that's what the drumming trance state induces, is this gnosis, this direct knowing that's a physical sensorial experience. And I find that people will always remember their journeys that they've had like that, because it does take your mind into a different state of knowing. Same thing is happening in the lucid dreaming state. You know, it's a heightened awareness where you're really encountering something that changes you. So these journeys build over time too. We create neural pathways through the practice of going on these drumming journeys or working with the lucid dreaming state, which I think it's so cool that I really specialize in the drumming journey lucidity, and Nisha really specializes in the lucid dreaming lucidity. So we can compare notes a lot, you know, and see how they're really going into the similar realms. So, yes, I'm so glad you've had that experience of what the drumming journey is really all about. Because even in naming the book, you know, about doing drumming, people talk to me like, yeah, drumming, you know, like they just think it's just drumming, you know, that you just dance to or something, but they don't realize that you are being systematically taken into this particular type of altered state consciousness that we need to explore as a training ground, like Nisha was saying, before encountering the psychedelic infusion. You can experience so much of what psychedelics are about in this lucid state through the drumming journeys. You know, we talked about me having worked with Stan Grof, and he uses the breath work to help people go into that altered state. But as the years went on, nothing against the breath work at all, I think it's great, but I leaned more toward the drumming journey because it's inducing that same type of lucidity, but it's easier. It's not so hard as doing the breath work to get, you know, it's much easier. Now, one more thing, that being said, it's really good to have a trainer in the doing of the drumming journeys, because our minds are trained to judge and discount so much. So it really helps people to do the training with me, because I can help them to understand what's happening in their psyche and not discount it. Like, I'll give you an example. Like one woman, she went into the trance-induced drumming state. She would come back and tell me, "Ah, I didn't experience anything." I'd say, "Wait, let's talk about it. Exactly what you experienced." So she said she got into this dark space, like you do head toward, but she just felt kind of weird there and she didn't see anything. I said, "Okay, what did you feel like?" She said, "Well, I just felt like I was a big blob hanging in space." "Okay, and what else?" So she said, "Well, I noticed I could only see like peripheral vision. And I noticed that it felt like my skin was very sensitive." So as she talked all about it, I was able to help her come to realize that she had experienced being in the whale's body. Right. So she didn't have the typical entry into it of seeing the whale and then swimming with it and becoming one with it, but she right away had become one with the whale. So, in other words, there's a lot of help that I can give people in understanding what's actually happening in their psyche and why it's happening to them in that particular way. So, we have a whole drumming journey training course that helps you to understand your psyche.
And before we get to the lucid dreaming, I just wanted to comment that with the drumming, what I took away from my experience was that I had to have that whole whatever preceded it, that it was something that I had to learn,
Yes.
and that the practice of it is important because, again, just like the psychedelics, it's not, someone's going to start drumming and you're immediately going to have this, ecstatic experience, but you kind of have to learn it. And,
It's such an important point, right? Because it takes patience to learn yourself, because you are learning important things about your psyche. So I always say that to people, if you're finding certain blockages, pay attention, because those are important pieces of information about your psyche. Like, I'll just give one other example, but one woman was having a hard time ever imagining herself and getting down into that hole and going on the journey. So five different times she tried and couldn't. And at that point with somebody, then I do this shamanic technique of having someone else drum, and I lay down next to them and I go into their psyche with them. And I discovered that, oh my goodness, no wonder she's having a hard time getting past the threshold, because she was actually sexually abused as a kid by a whole gang of people. And her psyche was completely blocked to going down in, because that was, a necessary defense that she had developed. So there's always a reason. So we have to pay attention to everything that happens in the lead up, right? Like you're saying. So that's called dealing with the threshold guardians. And lots of times in psychedelics, people are pushed right past the threshold guardians, or even in certain kinds of therapy, threshold guardians aren't paid attention to, and the person is, their boundaries are crossed right in the process of it. And so that's not teaching them their own empowerment, right? Because like you say, as you paid attention to the stages that your psyche was going through, you are learning a lot about yourself. And there's a reason for the pace that your psyche has to go. There's always reasons for it.
So let's talk a little bit about lucid dreaming because it's something that first the idea of lucid dreaming is being aware that you're dreaming, I think, right? But how can someone work with the lucid dreams? I have another question, but I'm going to leave it there for right now.
That's a great first question. Yes. So, I was describing lucid dreaming earlier and what that is about, what that experience is like. Some people spontaneously will have lucid dreams throughout their life, or maybe more so in childhood. And other people feel like, oh, I can't lucid dream, I can't even remember my dreams. But there is a practice to lucid dreaming if you really want to take it on as an element in your life and in working with your psyche. And it requires both daytime practice as well as in the nighttime. And I think people kind of don't realize that a lot of times and think, oh, this person's just naturally skilled in this area and I can never be. But really, we all do dream. It's been scientifically proven, even if we don't remember our dreams. And so there are ways, one, to strengthen your dream recall, to work with your dreams, to really invite them back into your life. Because again, in our culture, we've been taught, just like you were talking about earlier, Nick, that ordinary reality is the most important thing. It's what's really real. And the imaginal realms, the dream realms, all of these other things are to be discredited or just, not paid attention to, because they're not really going to impact our waking reality in a meaningful way. But again, with lucid dreaming, lucid living, it's about reintegrating the two phases of consciousness that we're going through in these cycles every day and learning from them. And so with lucid dreaming, you are strengthening your questioning mind that is constantly questioning, could I be dreaming? Because we, in our dreams, that part of our mind, like literally, physiologically, is turned off, that part of our brain that is the more cognitive questioning part of our mind, the prefrontal cortex, largely turned off. And so we don't question things. We can see a pink elephant in the middle of the room and be like, of course it's a pink elephant. They're in the middle of the room all the time. And only when you wake up, then you're like, oh, that was a dream, so obviously, but I didn't question it. So with lucid dreaming practices, what you're doing is you're constantly questioning your reality in waking reality. And then that leads to questioning in the dream time. You're asking yourself, could I be dreaming? You're looking around, you're becoming very present with the reality that you're in, you're studying it. And then you're performing what's called a reality check or a state check, which is an action you perform in order to verify what state of consciousness you're in. So one that people are familiar with is looking at your hand and flipping it back and forth. And if it stays the same and it's your normal hand, then you know, okay, I'm in waking reality. But if it changes, morphs, you have an extra finger. One time I had my hand turn into a lobster claw, then I knew beyond a doubt, okay, I'm in a dream. And then from that, lucidity can fully switch on, can fully be triggered. And then you go into the lucid dream state. And then, like we're talking about, you have access to so much more than you would in a non-lucid dream. And you're able to move from the space of personal empowerment and then bringing intention through. And that's in the book we talk about for drumming journeys, for psychedelic journeys, and for lucid dreaming. There are three things that are really important, which are a map. And we talk about the maps and learning your own map and the universal maps. A guide, which my mom was just talking about, finding a good guide that can help you to understand some of the experiences you're going through or provide you with, again, the map, the way to do it, and then a clear intent. And this is another thing with lucid dreaming that is really valuable on progressing you forward in your practice is understanding, okay, now that I can achieve lucidity, now that I can switch into this state of consciousness, what do I want to do once I'm there? And a lot of people maybe will be called from having, again, the shadow of recurring nightmares or scary experiences, sleep paralysis, things that they want to deal with that have been tormenting them in their dream time, but they haven't been able to because it's been in a more disempowered state. But then with lucid dreaming, they can confront those fears. They can really work in this very empowered way. And we have a whole course about that. Or it might be more from, a psychological lens of just wanting to understand your inner self more, to work through some of these habitual patterns. And we even talk about there's ways to approach it. There's also the scientific lens. There's nowadays been a lot of studies done on lucid dreaming and how you can practice skills and actually gain the skill in waking reality. And you can work with all of these cool strengthening of your neural pathways and memory formation. And then the third one is the spiritual calling, right? If you want to have, again, this gnosis, this direct experience of whatever spiritual path you're on, again, lucid dreaming feels like reality. And so being able, it's very real, being able to firsthand experience what it's like to meet with a guide that you might be working with in your spiritual path, or to have this experience of rapture or the clear mind or all of these things from different worlds, spiritualities, you can experience that in a much more lived way within lucid dreaming.
Yeah. And it seems that with lucid dreaming, just like with the drumming, that it's something that you do have to practice at. Like you said, the check-ins, every day, looking at your hand. And one of the challenges with lucid dreaming, and I find that personally that, it goes back to that intention, that if you have the intention, eventually you will, in short order, have a lucid dream. But what I've always struggled with is maintaining the lucidity in the dream.
Yeah, so that's something that I teach a lot about because it is a challenge a lot of people have where they'll become lucid and they'll either like get so excited that they wake themselves up or then be lucid for a little bit and then slip back into non-lucidity. And another thing just to say as an aside is that we can tend to be very like hierarchical in our culture and in our ways of framing things and even with dream work. And so we can think like lucid dreaming is the best type of dreaming and regular dreaming is to be discarded. But really our teaching is about all levels of dreaming and all realms of dreaming, non-lucid, lucid, vivid dreams, mundane dreams. They're all really important and contain messages, just like with the drumming journeys, not to discredit some because it's like, oh, well, that was nothing. I'm just gonna like not think about that. Write down all of your dreams. But then with lucid dreaming, when you click into that lucidity, there are things that you can do to sustain the lucid dream. So, one of them is to stare at a point on the ground. And the reason that this works is because the more you engage, like in a focused way, kind of like with meditation and waking reality, with the dream material, the more that it will then come back to you and form to you. So this is especially good technique if you feel the dream fading away, or if you're starting to lose lucidity. Stare at an object or stare at a single point on the floor to really re-engage with the dream. And the reverse works if you are in a scary situation and you really want to get out in a dream time, in the dream time. Sometimes people will be like, ah, I'm really staring at this monster because they're so scary. But actually, what you want to do is pull back your focus, like close your eyes, disengage with the dream, and that will help you to come out of it. So, with lucid dreaming, you can engage with it to stay in that material. And then another one that I really like that's worked for me, and it takes a little bit to get the knack of it, but is spinning in the lucid dream. And there's cool science around it that Stephen LaBerge has written about with the inner ear and how balance in the inner ear, that mechanism, also relates to REM sleep. And so, again, in the lucid dream, your brain can't tell the difference between what is a dream and what is waking reality. It's creating and forming it all. And so when you spin in the lucid dream, it's actually clicking on that mechanism that then again re-engages you with the dream, with the dream time. And so you can try that out when you're in a lucid dream next time and it starts to fade. Spin yourself, like physically in the dream, spin yourself around, and you'll find that it comes back to you. Lucidity forms, and you can even use it to transport yourself to another lucid dreamscape. So those are some things you can do to maintain lucidity once you've achieved it. And then the last thing I'll just say is, again, having the intention, the clear intention of what you want to do, because that can be another reason the dream fades, the lucidity fades, is you're just kind of wandering around and maybe you'll do some fun things, you'll fly in the air, but then you're like, okay, what do I do now? And then it'll just start to fade back into a non-lucid, or you'll wake up. But if you have that clear intent of, I want to achieve this, I want to talk to my higher self, then you can remember and reorient yourself to that, have that experience, get the gift out of it. It's fascinating.
Oh, sorry, Nick. I was just going to add one little thing here. Comparing the drumming journey work with the lucid state work and the dreams. When you're in a drumming journey, you can have that same experience of feeling like it's fading out or you're not concentrating. And so it's fascinating to see how the power animal guide works with you, because sometimes it will start spinning. And here's the guidance is you're supposed to do whatever the power animal does. So it will guide you to learn ways to continue your lucidity. So it's amazing how the drumming journey has within it. It's hard to describe, but it's like a consciousness that is training you. In every drumming journey you do, you'll be trained in the next step and the next step and the next step of going deeper and deeper into this lucid state of consciousness that has so much to show you. And so it's fun for Nisha and I to compare notes about what happens in the drumming world with what happens in the lucid dreaming world.
Yeah, and I'll just say to that, I believe through my experience that these different modalities really are taking you to a very similar place, including plant medicines. And it's just dependent on who is your ally in getting you there and the guide that you're with once you're there. And so, like you're hearing with drumming journeys, with lucid dreaming, you're going to this similar non-ordinary state of consciousness. And with plant medicines, a lot of times you are going to this like eternal now, non-ordinary state of consciousness, but then you have a different ally there with you, a different teacher. So power animals and lucid dreaming in the or in drumming journeys in lucid dreaming, a lot of times, you decide what kind of guides you're meeting. And then with psychedelics, the guide that you ingest to go on that journey, especially plant medicines, then that's going to be the guide that's there for you and the energetics that are there for you.
And it, I think one of the things that I appreciate about all of this, and this is sort of a bigger question as we towards the end here, and it's the one thing that I've been wanting to kind of address here, is that with this, the psychedelic renaissance and this interest in shamanism, and I know that there's also a definite interest in lucid dreaming, this is all a challenge to the dominant psychology, or the dominant way that psychology is practiced, which is not plant medicines necessarily, but with drugs that have not the best track record in terms of effectiveness. And this all seems to be a challenge to our modern Western industrialized progressive way of thinking. And that's kind of what I wanted to ask about, because I know, Nisha, you had mentioned this a couple times in the book, is that do you think that all of this is becoming more prevalent in the culture, in the Western culture? Do you think there's, I guess I want to ask it, that there's no mistake that it's coming about at this specific time? Because one of the things that was mentioned in the book was this idea, I think that it was phrased as the human mind being the microcosm to the greater macrocosm of the world. And the way I always phrase it is through this old hermetic axiom, there's as above, so below, but as within, so without. And when we look at the world right now, be it the climate crises or anything else, that is a reflection, I think, of the inner state of humanity. And it's telling us we've got a lot of work to do, but it has to begin with the individual, and it has to begin with becoming whole again and, gathering up those lost parts of our souls.
Absolutely. Yeah, now is the time, it really feels like. And we are in a liminal time right now, you're talking about, where we're between what has been and the old ways of doing things and this rapid change and growth. And of course, there is the climate crises and all of that. There's also AI, like you said in the introduction, I've worked with emerging technologies for a lot of my career and with AI now too, and how we're at this time where things are moving at an exponential speed and we're having access as humans to so much more information and ability to generate and create things and access again content, right, on social media to be really available to and downloaded with so much more information than ever before at the tip of at our fingertips. And so it really feels like this is a time of extreme expansion, extreme change, and the unknown. A lot of us feel this like deep existential unknowing of what next will happen in reality, in our human reality. And so again, being able to do the inner work, the personal work. I've had a lot of dreams, because obviously dreaming is really important to me, about how now is the time for these teachings, and it's so important. And again, these teachings go back all the way in human history, but to remind people, especially in our Western culture, of our access to this deep inner knowing and to this internal guidance, because we're going to need it as things continue to progress further and more rapidly, and as all of this is opening up in such a bigger way, teaching people how not to be afraid, because really, like, there's the biggest fear of death too that we all hold as humans that are in these mortal bodies. And non-ordinary consciousness is a space that is beyond that, beyond this physical reality form leaving and dying. And so teaching people about how to access those realms really does help with the fear of this, moving on into whatever comes after this life. And so it feels like a really powerful time as we're faced with all of these changes and all of these great shifts for people to understand, oh, I actually have within me the ability to navigate these liminal realms.
Right. And so the journey to completion is what the Huichol called it. And our whole planet is on a journey to completion. People get scared that it'll be a dystopic, negative ending. But my dreams and the dreams of shamanic prophets through time show us that there's a way to complete our own individual lives and the greater cycle in a positive way. That we bring all the threads of our shadow integration work through to completion. That's what we're supposed to do in one lifetime destiny path, is work systematically, doing our journey to completions over and over and over again, completing thread after thread or aspect after aspect of our split selves to come back into wholeness. And so as we do that as individuals and in groups, we're doing that. You talked about the microcosm and the macrocosm in the microcosm, and it really does affect the macrocosm. So that's why we really wanted to get this work out right now, too, to give people hope that as we walk these ancient pathways, these known pathways that humans have been walking for all of these tens of thousands of years, we're working together through the generations to accomplish something on planet Earth. Right? I mean, it's pretty exciting to think about that. It's not just a random, anything goes or anything can happen, but we're on a long-term pathway towards the completion of a destiny that we have as individuals and that we humans have. So the journey to completion, it's a pathway. That's what we're teaching in here. There are these pathways in our psyches that we have to learn. And then there's this ancient general pathway that you walk, and it can be known from beginning to end, So that's what we map out in the book is pathway of the journey to completion, which has the beginning where you do everything in preparation in a proper way, and you go into the exploration, you get the gift out of what you're intending to go there to get, and then you integrate it and you come back and establish it in ordinary reality. You're actually changing the structure of ordinary reality when you come back, and that's what we're meant to do and to do collectively so that we are truly, in a sense, magically changing the structures of ordinary reality.
And just, to add to that, our other book too, which is a book, an oracle deck that teaches about lucid dreaming in a non-linear way called Lucid Dreaming, Lucid Living. It's about that, right? It's about exactly like what Norma was just saying, which is that it's not only that you're doing these things in the dream time and you're having lucidity in that space, but really it's then about how you can have a more lucid life, how you can be in a lucid state in waking reality too, and experiencing, having this firsthand experience of what lucidity feels like in a dream, coming to the realization of, oh, this is a dream, like my psyche, my mind is creating this, then you can see how much of our waking reality is influenced by our perception, by our minds, and how we can shape and shift that waking reality when we know how to work with these pathways inside of ourselves and switch the lenses. If it's a distorted lens, how to get out of that habitual way of viewing reality to see a new reality really is possible on the individual and collective level. To envision, again, working with AI a lot, I see a lot of dystopic visions of how it can go in media. And being a filmmaker too, I'm like, yeah, I understand why that is. Conflict is what makes a good story. But we also need some utopic, we need some good visions to go towards because these new technologies aren't going anywhere. And if we only think, oh, it's predetermined that it's going to go this horrible way, then we won't even have the opportunity to steer the ship a different direction and to envision a better future. But I feel like that's what is so necessary for all of us in this time is in the individual level and the collective level to envision how we could go towards something really beautiful in this next stage.
Yeah. One of the things I mentioned that I've had a number of guests who have written about shamanism, and one of the things that they say, and it's pretty common, is that we need to remember who we are. And I always connect that to this idea of the shamanic initiation, where the shaman often, in that process of becoming a shaman, will experience this symbolic dismemberment. And that part of the process is to literally, kind of remember themselves. And that is a core part of this work. And one of the things that I've been thinking of in this conversation is it's not just this remembering, I mean, that's there, but it's also this process of decolonizing our minds and our souls.
Yeah, decolonizing, right? Because we're talking about power, right? There's a lot of forces on planet Earth of colonizing. And you're talking about the modern medical or psychological world, It can tend to set up a dependency upon external authority figures or a drug, is what's going to fix you. But these ancient practices are teaching us about our empowerment and learning how to gradually walk this pathway that is accessible to all of us so that we find ourself again, like you're saying, remembering who we are, remembering the great alignment of ourselves with a certain value system of spiritual consciousness in this universe that is all about love, that we reunite with that within ourselves and meet one another in that equal zone. So it's really important. These are ancient teachings that we are extremely powerful beings, and we're not supposed to be codependently giving our power away to the gurus or the dominators. We don't need to do that. I like Brian Mirarescu's book, The Immortality Key, too, because he talks about that was even there in Western culture too, the truth that we are extremely powerful beings who are immortal. And yet so much got taken away from us and is structured into our dominant system, especially Western culture, to separate us from that knowledge and to make us afraid. But as we go into these states of altered consciousness and have the gnosis, the knowing of who we are, it's so empowering. And then we come back from that, not afraid of death, and not afraid of what can be done to us, because we know, like Nietzsche's always saying, it's a dream. We're in a dream of a dream, and we are constantly creating what will manifest. So our that's why he called it the immortality key, because the key to not being afraid is to going into these altered states and knowing our immortality.
And building off of that briefly, with the decolonizing our minds side of things, also, like we're talking about and we talk about in the book, understanding your own lineage and ancestry. And as my mom was just saying, a lot of people from the West, from European ancestry, can feel like, oh, we didn't really have that, so we have to seek it out, in the Amazon from other cultures. And I think it's beautiful, especially in these times, that we have access to so many cultures, so many teachers. And there is a value in realizing and learning that if you trace any ancestry back far enough, there are these practices of entering non-ordinary states of consciousness. And there's both the individual lineage practices, and then you see a more universal connective way of how different cultures all are doing similar things to access these spaces and states. And so the more you learn that, the more you can feel, again, like personally empowered of, okay, this is something that is innately human and that is for all of us. And you move away from the appropriative way of doing things, which is very extractive and like, oh, I learned this thing from this culture. I read a book about it. Now I'm going to claim it as mine and I'm going to have authority and I'm going to like then, sell it and repurpose it and not name the lineage. So we really emphasize that learning and naming the lineage, especially like with oral traditions, is so important because then you are making you're drawing the clear line through, and there's a power in that. And really, when the line is cut off because somebody has an individual ego desire to be the one saying, I created this, then it loses its power because it's not connected to that continuous thread of knowledge, like my mom was saying, that humans have been working with throughout time. And when you keep that intact, then you have a full picture of how people have been on this journey to completion through particular lineages and lenses.
And I think that that's what people are really craving right now is they're looking for their own traditions. And there has been, I mean, from the Western perspective, our tradition, of course, is Christianity for the most part. I mean, the Judeo-Christian Islamic traditions, put it that way. But people aren't, they're struggling with that and looking for something a little bit more authentic. And they don't know where to look. And I think that the point that was made is that yes, this was part of the culture before that was imposed upon us. The way I always like to say it is the ability to explore our consciousness is all of our birthrights.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's so much in our Western culture that was taken from us by the magisterium, or you know, the powers that be that wanted to keep people from knowing their power. And so, you know, setting up these structures of power that actually were, you know, all structured to keep people from having access to the dream time and to their own altered state experience of power. So we've got a lot, you know, we have to take part a lot in Western culture heritage. Like Michel Foucault was a great deconstructionist, you know, who talked about the history of sexuality, meaning that there's a whole history in Western culture of controlling the body and therefore the mind and the knowing, that we're gradually working on healing that and deconstructing that. Whereas other cultures have stayed more in touch with the body, in touch with the earth, and have more ready access at great cost to themselves too, you know. So there's a great and amazing thing happening all over the planet, right, of coming back to our bodies and our body sense of knowing, and therefore also our access to our full consciousness. So yeah, I love that you brought up that subject of decolonizing, because it's a big work that's going on all over the planet and in every human to decolonize the structures of governance and the structures of religions and the structures that have implanted themselves in our minds of domination and self-hatred and separating us from our power within. So, right, it's an amazing thing that's going on all over the planet right now, that we are coming back to ourselves, remembering who we are.
And there's nothing wrong with learning from other traditions. I think it's a really beautiful time, like I was saying, that we're living in, where we have access to so much. The kid I grew up, because my mom would lead tours around the world to the sacred sites and to work with healers and shamans around the world. And so having that multicultural upbringing and having exposure to all of that before the internet times, when it was so easy, had a really profound impact on me and who I grew up into. And so now, yes, having access to all of that is beautiful, and learning the similarities and differences from different pathways. And again, so it's not about like, don't learn or just focus on your own lineage, but by learning your own lineage, then you feel more empowered to say, yes, like you were just saying, Nick, we all do have a birthright to access these spaces. And this is how my ancestors did it. This is how the people over here did it. And then you can create a more holistic view of it all. And again, just honoring and naming, oh, and I got this from this lineage, and this thing that we're talking about here came from here. And then you're painting that fuller picture.
And you know, an interesting thing that I experienced is I've led drumming journeys with humans all over the world, like in Japan, in Europe, Africa, South America. I was amazed that when I take people into that drumming journey space, they go to similar geographies. No matter what culture they grew up in, go into the dream time, and there are similar geographies that humans go to. So that's fascinating, because that means that there really are these places in the dream time that all humans have access to that aren't really affected by culture.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. And I think that the point being made is absolutely crucial, that I think historically cultures have always interacted and shared with each other. But what we need to avoid is the appropriation, saying this is all mine now, but to show the respect. I know that we're running out of time here, but it's been a lovely conversation. But let me ask you each, what do you have coming up next? What are you working on?
Yeah, so we have a lot of exciting things, as you know, we have this new book that is releasing into the world, and we're doing a lot more teaching, speaking at conferences. And so in November, we'll be presenting as a part of the Monroe Institute in Italy They have a conference called Consciousness Unveiled, and we're going to be teaching about lucid dreaming and a lot of what we were talking about today at that conference. And then we also are getting ready to launch several courses, online courses, as a way for people to engage and learn about these things passively at their own pace and on the, online. So some of the courses that we're launching are a lucid dreaming course that teaches, again, these basic principles of lucid dreaming and how to really work with your dream time from just remembering your dreams all the way to having really powerful lucid experiences and a way to track all of that in a systematic formula. And then we're also launching one, like my mom said, about drumming journeys and how to go on those and how to receive your animal guide, your power animal, and the inner guidance that that provides. We have a class specifically on working with your nightmares, because that's, again, a big pain point for a lot of people and something that disconnects them from the dream time because they're having sleep paralysis experiences or recurrent nightmares, and those are scaring them away from working with their dreams. We have a course about psychedelics and, how to use them in this holistic way that we're talking about, and then a lucid dreaming master class that goes into more advanced lucid dreaming practices. So all of those will be ro rolling out over the next few months into the fall. And the way to find those and to find out about them is through our website, which is lucidliving.com. And we'll be posting all of those on there in that space.
And I'm also under contract working on the next book, which is about the journey to completion. So it's the master class training in the whole process of the journey to completion. So we'll also have an online course that leads people into that and leads to then, if they want to get together in person, we'll have in-person gatherings, different places around the world where people can deeply experience the journey to completion methodology.
Yeah, and similarly, we in the winter and spring of next year will be having more retreats, which people, one, can work with the journey to completion, and then also we'll have retreats for the lucid dreaming and drumming journey work, where people can have this communal shared experience of really powerfully for a set period of time being with one another and working with these profound practices. And it's really cool what can happen when you're in community, crossing between the dream time and ordinary reality.
And she's good online, like she has the Lucid Dreaming, Lucid Living, beautiful website, but then also it's a YouTube channel
Yeah,
and
same name.
Instagram.
Same name.
Yeah, Lucid Dreaming, Lucid Living. So check out all the different sites for little bite-sized pieces of training and all of this too.
Okay. Yeah, wonderful. Well, I will put links for the main website and the social media, as well as your book in the show notes in the video description. It's a wonderful resource for people who want to explore their psyches and these liminal realms. And I always, like to thank people who are dedicating themselves to healing and healing the world, because we are in desperate need of that right now. So thank you. Thank you both. So I've really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you so much, both of you, for your time today. And again, thank you for the work that you're doing.
It's been great talking with you, Nick. Such a deep conversation.
Yeah, thank
Thanks
you
so
so
much.
much.
And that's a wrap on episode 211 of Rebel Spirit Radio. Thank you so much for listening or watching if you're a part of my YouTube audience. As always, if you enjoyed this episode, please hit that like button if you're watching on YouTube, and don't forget to subscribe to the channel and click that notification bell. You can also follow Rebel Spirit Radio on whatever audio platform you use for listening to podcasts. Right now, I have over 20,000 downloads on the audio platforms, yet I only have 13 followers, and one of those is me. It only takes a second to like, follow, or subscribe. It's totally free, and it really does help. Putting together this podcast is a labor of love. I do love it, but it is a lot of labor. So if you find value in the conversations I provide here, I hope you can find it in your heart to send a little love my way. With more subscribers and followers, I could possibly get some sponsorship, and honestly, having some funds come my way to help with equipment, hosting, and other necessary subscriptions would be really helpful. You can also help by joining my Patreon at patreon.com/rebelspirit. The link is also in the episode description. You can also purchase a Super Thanks on YouTube to help support my work. As I always like to say, I'm here in the Front Range now doing missionary work in regards to religion, spirituality, and ecology, consciousness, the esoteric, and how all of this can help us heal humanity's sacred relationship with the living earth. So if you feel moved by the rebel spirit, and you know, I sure hope that you do, then please, by all means, help me in my efforts to share the good news. I'm Nick Mather, and you've been listening to or watching Rebel Spirit Radio. Until next time, may you be in peace, may you flourish in all possible ways, and may you continue to nurture your rebel spirit.